It's the Dearly Departed Podcast, featuring your host, historian Scott Michaels, and filmmaker Mike Dorsey.
It's episode 10 of the Dearly Departed Podcast. Can you believe it? We've done 10 episodes, Scott.
And they said it wouldn't last.
They said it would never last. I'm Mike Dorsey.
Scott Michaels.
And this is Dearly Departed Podcast. Amazing.
Hooray.
Episode 10. We did it.
Yay.
And here's to 10 more.
Yes.
And then 10 more after that.
Please.
I love it.
Yeah, we love it. We enjoy doing it. Send us money.
All right. With that, hate mail.
Hate mail.
Hate mail.
Oh, I sent you my best hate mail.
Yeah, it was funny. So what was it?
I don't remember. Oh. I sent it to you.
Yeah, I've got it here. I thought I was going to throw it to you, Scott. Okay. It was a comment on your the Hollywood Death Trip video on YouTube.
Yeah.
And somebody just wrote, lame.
Oh, yeah. You know, never mind the 25 people that work, you know, how many months on that show. And
lame.
Meh.
A one-syllable critique.
All people right. are such dicks.
At least they were being honest.
And it was funny. It gave me a laugh.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, I get lots of people go, you know, I get the you suck, and then they go, kidding, we like your podcast.
Yay.
It's like this really, again, thank you guys for listening. Appreciate that. Really appreciate the nice comments. And when people come up to me in the shop and let me know that they enjoy it, and I ask them, you know, what have any ideas? And it's cool because today's is one of those ideas.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Today, we are going to talk about the Poseidon Adventure.
Hell upside down.
Yeah. But first, news of the week.
News of the week.
Okay, first of all, I mean, the big story we have to talk about here in Los Angeles is the earthquakes that
yes.
we've been getting. First, a 6.4 out in Ridgecrest, which is about 130 miles northeast or so of L.A. And then like a day or so later, a 7.1, which is just massive. And it messed some places up out there. And Trona, which we went through when we went out to Barker Ranch out in Death Valley. Remember that?
Yeah.
It's like the last town you stop at before you head out to Ballarat.
Trona's, yeah, it's a real...
it's rough to begin with. And, I mean, you kind of feel for that community because it doesn't seem like a community with a lot of money to begin with.
It looks like there was a nuclear power plant out there or something. I mean, that's the way it is. Like, 7-Eleven never has anyone in it.
But where were you when the earthquake hit?
No offense.
No offense Trona to the people of Trona.
We were at home. I was at home and I grabbed my lava lamps and
we all reached that's when you're a real Californian, you don't have to worry about yourself. You worry about the stuff that matters the most to you.
What did
Troy go for?
I say, well, Troy was, he grabbed one of the lamps off the table.
Saved the lamps.
Yeah.
That's yeah. And then I posted a video of me saving my television,
which you should have, because that thing is like a casket.
It was
the thing is so massive.
Yeah. It was going like a pendulum. I posted a video to Twitter and it got like 22,000 views. So I'll post it, link to it on our Facebook page and our site and stuff.
I got footage at the shop, but it was like, you know, because we have the cameras going on 24/7. So I was able to pull up the time and you can see it from start to finish. And it's interesting. We have like a sort of a settee kind of sofa thing hanging from the ceiling. And on it is a mannequin with a Zsa Zsa Gabor's nightgown on it, you know, like there would be.
Right.
And anyway, so you could see the poster of Bugliosi in the background starting to move back and forth and back and forth. And then you could see Zsa Zsa Gabor, her foot starts kicking the camera.
Yes.
So that was pretty, I mean, you could sounds really mm-hmm. loud too. It was kind of creepy, but it was disturbing because it lasted for so long.
Yeah.
I was like, when is it going to get, Is it going to get worse?
That's always the scary part of earthquakes because they roll in.
And yeah,
you
the
don't
next
know
day,
how much more intense it's going to get, you know, until it tapers off.
And then after that, anytime a truck passes by,
I know.
You know, the next day I was doing a tour the next day, and anytime anyone went by, is that it? Is that an aftershock?
Yeah.
You know,
it's earthquake PTSD. Every time my chair wobbles,
yeah,
I like look over at my television again and see.
Street lights, car alarms. You know,
That's
wild.
That's just part of living in Los Angeles.
I mean, that's part of the inspiration of what we're doing today too, because I wanted to do a disaster movie too, an earthquake. Who cares about Lauren Green? You know, Poseidon Adventure is a much better cast.
Yes.
So that's why we're talking about Poseidon Adventure.
Wonderful. Well, it's fitting that we had an earthquake right before our show, our disaster show. I love it. First on news, before we get into deaths of the week or of the month, big news for you, Scott, La Bianca House is for sale.
Shut up. I know. I saw that, man.
I saw you said all you want for Christmas.
All my Christmases from now on. I mean, that piece of property, you know, the La Biancas, obviously we're going to be talking about, you know, something helter-skelter today, probably a lot. But that house is the second night of murders. Mr. and Mrs. La Bianca were murdered in that house.
And that house Charlie tied them up, and then the Texans. The girls went in and killed them. Yeah,
yeah, and you know, Manson knew the layout. He knew, you know, he'd been next door anyway. So the house has been owned by three or four people, I think, since the murders, and it was sold most recently about 20 years ago for $395,000, I think. But this house is—it's not a very nice house. You know, it's got damage. If you look on Redfin and see the pictures, you can see the cracked walls. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, it's not in good shape. Huh. It needs care. But it's a huge piece of property on a hilltop. Views. I mean, there's downtown Glendale is one way, downtown L.A. the other way.
And I didn't realize it had such great views because from the street, you're below it.
Yeah.
So you don't notice. But once you get up there, yeah, the views are amazing.
And that next door piece of property that Katy Perry was fighting over, you know, the
is
nuns.
Is that where the nuns are?
Yeah, right next door.
I didn't know that where that was.
Yeah.
Oh, and she lost.
She won. Well, I don't know. Somebody told me it was still going on, but I think she lost.
I think it's over.
Because she sued for legal expenses and got those.
Oh.
But, it was just interesting because Katy Perry, when she was in the fight to get that piece of property, and for those of you that don't know, because probably no one does because we're nerds, the property next to the La Bianca house is a huge mansion. It's owned by depending on who you ask, the three 90-year-old nuns that live there or the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. And the nun sold it to a woman who wanted to build a hotel. The Archdiocese sold it to Katy Perry. And there was a big legal dispute. And one of the nuns dropped dead in the courtroom. Look it up. It's true. That wasn't even that long ago. So I think they finally settled the lawsuit. But the nuns still live there. But while Katy Perry was in that fight to get that house, she released a single called Rise. I know that's. I mean, no, it's a reach. That's a real reach. But that was one of the words that Kremwinkel wrote on the wall in the La Bianca house. You know,
wow.
I just. You know, again, it's the way my brain works. Mm-hmm. You know, the way I'm wired.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of an interesting.
How
bit of trivia.
Much is the La Bianca house listed for?
Just under $2 million. Which
good Lord,
is not that bad.
But you're gonna have weirdos. All the time.
You know, I'm there every week, and I see it several times
a
week, and I've never seen anybody go in.
Okay, good.
But what I would do if I owned that house is I'd put the front lawn back. I'd take that ugly parking lot that they made up there, and I would put fake that wrapping on my windows so it looks like the curtains are open. You can see out, but you can't see in.
Uh-huh.
That's what I would do because that's the issue is that you could see inside the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that when you're people, you look out your window and see a tour bus looking at you. However, they knew what they were getting into, and they even said that in the ad. Make sure to research
yes,
this address.
They told exactly. They told the listing agents and all the real estate people to make sure you look research before. Yeah, I would buy it and then park a boat in front of it all the time.
Yeah. I would live in it. And not that I ever wanted to live in a murder house, but I would live in it to make sure it stays there.
Right.
Because it's such a huge part of LA history.
And it's a big piece of property, too.
Yeah, it's a beautiful property.
Yeah.
I would definitely... Yeah, but anyway, that's a pipe dream, but it'd be awesome.
So speaking of murders, we have an update on a story we've been following here breathlessly on Dearly Departed Podcast. Former Mouseketeer Dennis Day, they did officially declare him dead. They have pretty much declared him murdered or killed, and they have arrested a former handyman who had been helping around the house and kind of living there part-time in connection with it.
He was a drug user, wasn't he? The handyman was he?
They said he had a history, I think, of a meth issue last year where he tried to choke a girlfriend while he was on meth. Mm-hmm. He said that she was possessed or something like that. So yeah, he had drugs. He had some assault history, I think, crime history. So he wasn't a good guy, and he'd been brought in to help them because, you know, with their age, Dennis Day and his husband, with their advanced age, they needed help keeping the place up, and that's why this guy was there. And it just turned out he was a bad guy.
Yeah, the house looks like a, you know, it's a shack, and then they're hoarders.
It's a bit of a hoarder, yeah.
Yeah, but so what? I mean, maybe that's just, that accounts for some of the people they attracted around them.
And what else is, too, is I read kind of a good article that was like, and we posted this to our Facebook page, him and his husband had, you know, it seemed like they had a pretty good life in their younger years. You know, mm-hmm. they were involved with acting workshops and Renaissance fairs and seemed to be like living their life. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, and then as they got to advanced age and they couldn't do it anymore. And then the lack of money really became a problem.
Yeah.
For them.
I know the husband
being old and poor was a bad combination.
And unhealthy.
Yeah. So
the husband was incapacitated somehow. He didn't even report him missing for a while.
Well, the husband has been in assisted living. He was in assisted living when he disappeared. Wasn't around to know. So Dennis Day was there alone with this handyman guy. And apparently the friend that introduced the handyman to them, Dennis Day showed up at that friend's house right before he went missing and said that the guy had pushed him down or assaulted him in some way and that he was afraid of him.
That's so sad. People messing with old people, man.
I know. And then they also arrested two women because the other part of the story was Dennis Day's car was found 130 miles away on the coast of Oregon. And these two women have been arrested for stealing it. They originally said at the time that he had loaned it to them, but they stole it like weeks later. Apparently, they stayed in the house for a time, and then they left because they thought the handyman was a freak too. And when Dennis Day wasn't around, they claimed they never saw a body or anything. They said it was just this handyman there, and they stole the car on their way out. So
I mean, it was the weirdest thing. They found a body, but they wouldn't say who it was for the longest time. And it's like, well, how many people can it be? But
it took them a month to identify it. So whatever shape it was in, it was bad.
Yeah,
and it wasn't found until they brought cadaver dog. It was in the house somewhere. Even though police had searched the house, they had searched the attic, they had searched the crawl space, they claimed they never found
that
anything.
Poor guy.
And it wasn't until they brought the cadaver dogs out 9 months later that they found him in there somewhere. So there's some, I mean, police have some questions to answer for
sure.
Who searched the house and how thoroughly did they really look?
This is certainly a good chapter in a novel, you know? If not itself.
Yeah.
Did you, you know, unrelated but related because the story gets weirder and weirder, did you hear about that lady that ran over that Holocaust survivor?
In the
valley. It's in Valley Village a couple of weeks ago. And this guy's 93, survived the Holocaust. This woman runs him over in a motorhome. So then it turns out that this woman had a documentary made about her because... what did she do? Well, I do know that she sent her son to a house to steal money to get money for a prosthetic leg for her horse.
What?
I know, right? And there was, why did they make that documentary about her? God damn it, we got to look that up. We have to look this up.
We will look that up and we will report on it.
Oh, my God. They made a whole documentary about it because she became a party girl. But so she kidnapped her Mormon boyfriend.
Oh, yeah.
And held him hostage.
Errol Morris made the documentary about it. It was called Tabloid.
It's her.
Yeah.
Killed the Holocaust guy, and she was also, they made a documentary about her. She kidnapped her Mormon boyfriend and kept him as a sex slave.
It's a really good documentary. Yeah.
And then she got busted for trying to buy a horse a prosthetic leg, and then she ran over a guy that was a Holocaust survivor.
Jeez,
and she's homeless. There's pictures of her taking a shit in the street. And
nice.
You know?
Well, that's all right. In Oklahoma this week, a guy was arrested. He was pulled over in a stolen vehicle, and he had a rattlesnake and uranium and a bottle of whiskey in his open bottle of whiskey in the car
uranium.
With him. Yes, actual
uranium.
You sure
it wasn't urine?
No, it was actual uranium. And this is the funniest part.
That?
So he got arrested for, I think this vehicle was stolen. He had like a suspended license maybe. He was arrested for some other things. They did not find any reason to charge him for the rattlesnake and the uranium. And apparently the uranium was not weapons grade. And apparently you can legally buy the low.
For what?
That's, of course, the big question. But I just think it's... If you get pulled over for all those things and the uranium and the rattlesnake are the least of the law enforcement's concerns.
Yeah. Just certainly more than red flags.
Yeah.
There's several red flags. People jumping up and down. Bizarre. One other thing. We had a neighborhood blackout yesterday.
You know,
my neighborhood? Yeah, yeah. All of Paramount Studios was out of power. My whole block, I mean, there was an entire neighborhood out. It turns out that it was Mylar balloons.
Dude, stop letting those Mylar balloons go. Stop buying the Mylar. Those are the metallic ones.
Yeah.
You can get in like grocery stores.
They float up and they get entangled in electric lines. And we had a now the straws. The straws, Mike.
There's a good one. Get well soon.
Why is there such a fuss about a frickin' straw going up a turtle's nose? No disrespect.
Uh-huh.
And then there's these balloons that put out entire neighborhoods, and people are not doing anything about it.
I have a straw story for you. New one. You'll like this one.
Yeah.
A lady was killed when she fell on her 10-inch stainless steel straw. It went in through her eyeball and into her brain and killed her.
Sorry.
It's terrible. Sorry.
Wow. Well, yes. You know what? I blame those sea turtle people completely. It's their own damn fault. You know what? That fuck them. Yeah. You know, I mean, they have ruined everyone's lives because we got to suck through paper straws now, which is like sucking through cloth.
Scott Michaels, fuck the sea turtle people. Seriously.
I didn't say the sea turtles. I said the people.
I said sea turtle people. Yeah.
Fuck them. You know what? Go after balloons, for God's sake. Oh, my God. I can't. Oh. I can't.
I like my steel...
But why do you need it?
I don't, because it's plastic.
I go to I go to McDonald's and take all the straws I want. I carry them with me. Fuck them. Sorry. All right. Oh, I know. You could tell you touched a nerve.
Yeah. Rip Torn.
Oh, bummer.
Passed away. Yeah, big one. Larry Sanders Show, Defending Your Life, Men in Black, many things. I probably know him best from Wonder Boys because that's one of my favorite films. Mm-hmm. He played a character called Q in Wonder Boys. 88 years old, died on July 9th.
I was sent by a couple of people him attacking Norman Mailer with a hammer, which is pretty interesting. Well, there's video.
He had issues with anger on the set and stuff in his career,
Yeah. And ironically, or maybe not, maybe they put it into in that movie purposely, Dodgeball's one of my favorites. And him throwing wrenches at the people. You could dodge a wrench, you could dodge a ball. I love that. So maybe that's a play on his hammer thing.
Maybe. Denise Nickerson, who was Violet Beauregard on Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, just died on the 11th at the age of 62 from a stroke, and she'd been on life support, and then they took her off.
She'd been very ill for a really long time.
Yeah.
And we're going to mention a Willy Wonka thing in just a couple of minutes.
Well, she blew up like a blueberry, and she never recovered.
Violet, you're turning violet. I love that movie. That's such a great... That is a sinister... crazy freaking movie.
They torture children. They go through the scariest tunnel you've ever gone through in your life.
And Wilder is just like, no, stop, please. When my son, he's going to die. No, I know. Isn't it exciting?
Yes.
I love it. He was great in that.
Freddie Jones, British actor, David Lynch favorite. He was in The Elephant Man in Dune. He died at 91 after a short illness on July 9th. Lee Iacocca, the big car guy, Detroit. Legend.
Yeah, we were a Chrysler family, man. It was a big deal in our house. My dad was lifelong Chrysler.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and my brother and my niece family. Went to his funeral. Were you?
We're a Chevy family. Yeah, so GM still. Yeah.
I was GM for a while, and then my brother's Ford. He retired from Ford, and my dad was Chrysler.
Crazy.
And it was Detroit.
Ross Perot died at 89 on July 9th.
By most reports, a very nice, very likable guy. I love the fact...
A self-made billionaire.
Yeah, and he didn't spend a dime of fundraising money on his campaign. He spent all his own money. I thought that was very respectful.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was really... and he got a significant percentage of votes.
He absolutely did.
It's just that people... Yeah, they didn't. But he was I've only ever heard really good things about him as a human being.
Sure.
Politics aside, because I really don't know much about his politics anymore.
Yeah, so don't send hate mail about Ross Perot's politics. Yeah. We don't know.
Or anyone's.
Yeah. Or anybody else's while you're at it. Cameron Boyce, who was a Disney star. He was 20 years old, died on July 6th, and his family said it was illness related. There was one rumor that it may have been something regarding seizures.
Yeah, I've heard that.
We don't, but
20 years old.
I don't know. It really sucks.
Yeah, it does. And they ditched the franchise. They canceled that franchise now.
Oh, okay.
I guess he had already made two, and three was in the works, and they ditched.
Paul Benjamin, Midnight Cowboy, Escape from Alcatraz, and probably most well known from Do the Right Thing. Died on June 28th, 81.
A lot of people died.
And
this
he was
time.
Memorialized by Spike Lee upon his death. And
nice.
Art Johnson from Laugh-In.
Artie.
Sorry. Let me try again.
Oh my God. The funny Nazi on Laugh-In.
I don't know. I wasn't around for Laugh-In. Artie Johnson.
Yes.
From Laugh-In. Died at 90.
I love Laugh-In. What a
July
great
3rd.
Show. What a great show that was. Man, talk about a politically insane show for the time to have that stuff being set on television.
And a precursor to all the sketch comedy shows and stuff that have come since.
A pop culture explosion. And un-PC is all get out.
It is one of those shows where you can't believe they got to make it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he played the funny Nazi. You know, he sat in the bushes and kept saying, very interesting. And also the guy that would sexually harass Ruth Buzzy, you know, she would beat him with her purse. And it was all, he was just moving over the park bench and grabbing her and stuff like that. And, you know, nowadays he'd be lynched. But
there'd be a hashtag dedicated to him.
Oh, yeah,
Twitter,
they'd be picketing outside this beautiful downtown Burbank. But so many taglines came from that show, you know. I mean, there is still being used today.
I'm going to pronounce this probably wrong, but Billy Drago or Drago or Drago?
All of the
above. I feel so bad.
We all
know. Maybe I'll look it up.
Who you mean?
The Untouchables, Pale Rider. He often played a villain. He was 73, died June 24th of a possible stroke.
That's young.
Beth Chapman, Dog the Bounty Hunter's wife, died at 51 on June 26th from cancer. I think she'd had it for a while.
Yeah.
And that's
sad. You ever see?
He supposedly has lost. I saw a report that he's lost like 17 pounds since she died.
She's been very ill for a long time. And so it wasn't out of nowhere. Not that you don't prepare for that, even if you prepare for it.
Yeah.
But I knew that she'd been ill for a long time and she was taken off life support. You ever see South Park do Dog the Bounty Hunter?
I think I missed that one. No.
Where Cartman is dressed like her, and you see two little eyes and these two enormous boobs. It's very funny.
It's South Park.
Yeah.
We just passed the 50th anniversary of Judy Garland's death.
God bless her.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was, and I just saw the trailer for that new Renee Zellweger movie. That looks really good.
It looks fantastic.
That thing has been in the can for months, maybe even a year. So I don't know what the deal is with
that. I hope it's good. I hope it's not because it's bad.
Some of her mannerisms.
The trailer looked amazing.
Yeah, her mannerisms, she's got it down. And something I learned this week, and I didn't realize, because, you know, it's all gay pride this week, or this month, June.
Last month, yeah. It's July
last
now.
Month. And Judy died, and they always say that it was her funeral that kicked off gay pride, and it really wasn't. It just happened to be going on at the same time.
Right.
But this whole situation had been brewing for a really long time at the Stonewall Inn, and it's just a coincidence. It wasn't what caused it, but it certainly maybe a tiny way exacerbated it.
Right.
But I just saw a documentary about it, and everyone, you know, brags about it. I was the first one to throw the first brick.
Everybody, yeah.
And but there were no bricks. You know, people are going, where did the bricks come from? There were no bricks. There were some rocks.
Max Wright. This is one I really want to talk about. Max Wright, who was Dad Willie Tanner on ALF, died on June 26th at the age of 75. His life had fallen apart in a very big way after ALF went off the air. ALF was an 80s sitcom that ran until 1990. And so he got into drug use, and there was video of him taking homeless men home to his house for sex and crack, to smoke crack with them, and he made porn.
Crack and crack,
exactly. I mean, it's about as bad of a PR look as you could possibly have, probably, for an actor, and he just let his whole life go. I don't know what happened, but he just was in, until the very end, he was kind of a recluse. And
so
just
I wonder if he tried to continue a career, and it just didn't work out, or?
It seemed like it was fairly soon after, but maybe not. Yeah, maybe things
some kind of mental breakdown.
Could have been. But so a friend of mine is an actor. His name's Bob, and Bob was on an episode of ALF back in the day, and it was an episode where the Max Wright's character, the dad, gets arrested, and it's part of a mistaken identity. He gets arrested, and he gets thrown in this holding cell, and in the holding cells, there's like a dozen guys that look just like him, and my friend looks like him, so he got cast as one of the other guys that gets arrested. And so he goes, fast forward a few years, and you know, the show's off the air, and I'm in the grocery store checkout, and I see on the tabloid the photos of Max Wright with, you know, the homeless guys in his house and smoking crack out of, you know, a homemade pipe and stuff. And it's just, and he goes, oh my gosh. And he goes, I had to buy it because I didn't know what was going on. So I put it down on the, you know, the conveyor belt, and I got up to pay, and the cashier looked at the magazine and then looked at me and then looked back down at the magazine and then looked back up at me and was like, hey man, like, you know, keep your head up. It'll get better. You know, he's like, no, it's not me.
That's a very LA story.
Right. Dick Dale. We had to mention this. Scott, and why?
Oh, the other day I did a rock and roll tour with my partner, or Lisa Jordan, who has LA Woman Tours. We do these tours. It's really her tour, but we do it in conjunction with Dearly Departed. And a gentleman was on the tour, and forgive me, I can't remember your name, but he did say to me, I really like the podcast, and you forgot to mention Dick Dale. Now, we did a little bit of research, and Dick Dale actually died back in March, but I mean, you say, Mike, who was Dick Dale?
Dick Dale was the father of surf guitar. and his, you know, some Mizzaloo and some of these other big hits. The opening credit sequence to Pulp Fiction is Dick Dale.
Legendary.
He's legendary. L.A., you know, California-based guy. My dad grew up watching him play at the Rendezvous Ballroom in Balboa. So, yeah, he was a major, major big music surf guitar legend.
Yeah. I mean, that whole Pulp Fiction, Tarantino loves that type of guitar. I love that. So, yeah, rest in peace, and there you are. Oh, he died of colorectal cancer in March.
Not the last time you're going to hear about that today.
Rectal cancer.
Colorectal cancer. Now one of us is going to get that because we laughed about it, Scott.
I know.
Dang
I know.
It. All right. Anything else newsworthy? What else you got?
I don't think so.
Is that all that happened?
You know, really, honestly.
That's all that's happening in the world that's worth talking about.
It's time for the main feature.
The Poseidon Adventure. 1972, starring Gene Hackman, Ernest Borgnine, Red Buttons, Carol Lindley, Roddy McDowall, Stella Stevens, Shelley Winters, Jack Albertson, who was Grandpa Joe in Willy Wonka, which we just mentioned earlier, and who else?
Well, Leslie Nielsen.
He played the captain. He's only in like one scene.
And really, as far as the principals go, there were a lot of people in that movie, extras that were significant. But those were certainly the principals.
Yeah, and I mean, talk about some heavy hitters from Hollywood history.
Yeah, I mean, 72, Poseidon Adventure was my very first PG movie ever. I was 10 years old.
You were only allowed to do G's up until then?
Yeah. And that's back when you had to have an adult with you to the theater. You did. You literally had to have an adult take you in.
For a PG, you had to, yeah. Because there was no PG-13 at that time,
right.
So it kind of was a catch-all.
It was Raiders of the Lost Ark, or one of those movies started that. Indiana Jones, I think it was, the PG-13. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it was, interestingly enough, there is a tie-in. Indiana Jones, the music, was done by John Williams, who did the music
for Poseidon Adventure.
And Lost in Space, and Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, and Valley of the Dolls, and Star Wars. Wars and Superman, and John Williams is something else. Back then they called him Johnny Williams.
Johnny Williams.
Yeah, but yeah, talk about some legendary music. But anyway, he's alive.
John Williams is alive, yes. Semi-retired, I think, to some extent, but he is still involved in the Star Wars
movies. We call it special needs now, Mike.
Retired. Semi-retired. Okay. And for those of you who don't know what the plot of the Poseidon Adventure is, it's a cruise ship that gets rolled over by a rogue wave and basically, you know, flipped upside down, capsized, and is now stuck upside down, so that people have to find a way to survive in an upside down boat
and get their way
up through, you know, back down through the ship to get to the hole.
They're on the top floor and ultimately ends up on the bottom floor, and they have to climb their way up to the bottom.
Up to the bottom, exactly, yeah.
It's a great story. And it was New Year's Eve. And it's a tradition, and Troy and I do this every year, where we queue up at the Poseidon Adventure. I have the timing. I will tell you now. So write this down for next year.
Yes.
You queue up the Poseidon Adventure at 11:35.6 seconds, 11:35.06. And then you hit play at exactly 24.54 seconds to midnight. 24 minutes and 54 seconds to midnight.
Okay.
You push play on your thing, and it rings in. The tidal wave happens a little bit after the ringing in of the new year.
It rings
in the new year exactly as it does on the Poseidon. So we do this every year.
And then you get to pretend you're drowning like a minute later.
Yeah. We all do our Shelley Winters impersonation. So 24:54 to midnight, 11:35.06 on the disc.
Wow.
Boom.
There you go.
You'll never forget it.
Yeah, so you can do Wizard of Oz, Dark Side of the Moon, and then this, and you've got a party for New Year's. It was among these big classic 70s disaster movies like Earthquake and
The
Towering Inferno and Airport. Mm-hmm. It just kicked that all off. And a lot of movies today, the big disaster with all the, you know, the Roland Emmerich movies are probably kind of owe a debt to the Poseidon Adventure.
Yeah.
And it got 9 Oscar nominations. Mm-hmm. It won the Academy Award for Best Original Song for The Morning After, and a Special Achievement Academy Award for Visual Effects.
I mean, you know, good. Considering, my gosh, yeah, their use of miniatures. I was watching it last night. It wasn't terrible. You know, in retrospect, 40-something years later, it wasn't terrible.
I mean, you can tell that, you know, the shots of the ship going through the ocean are obviously a model.
Yeah.
You know, clearly now. But back then, it probably looked really good.
I mean,
and all the fire effects and stuff in it were really good.
And they were real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was not CGI. They really did that stuff.
Right. It won, Shelley Winters was, I think, nominated for Best Supporting Actress, and she won for Academy Award, and she won the Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actress, which I wrote in here as a Golden Glove. So she was also
a boxer.
She was also a really good
boxer. Oh, that's a big gold, that big gold belt she wore all the time.
and then Ronald Neame was the director,
mm-hmm.
and he had something interesting. He lived to be 99 years old. And he said, when people ask me about the secret to my longevity, I say the honest answer is 2 large vodkas at lunch and 3 large scotches in the evening. All my doctors have said to me, Ronnie, if you would drink less, you'd live a lot longer. But they're all dead, and I'm still here at 95.
I know. There was a story. A lot of this information you're going to hear come out of my mouth today came from my buddy Jack. Jack Castro. I've been friends with Jack online for decades, and personally for 5 or 6 years we've known each other. And Jack was the very first person to have a Poseidon Adventure fan club. He had permission from 20th Century Fox in writing to run the Poseidon Adventure fan club. And he started doing the reunion shows at the Queen Mary where they actually shot the film or a lot of the exteriors of the ship on the Queen Mary. So Jack put together a lot of the reunion shows, and a lot of the information that I got is from Jack today. So he talked about how Irwin Allen, who is the master of disaster, who mm-hmm. did Poseidon Adventure and Towering Inferno and Land of the Giants and et cetera. I guess he always was. There was a problem between he and Ronald Neame. We have his name already?
Yeah, that's right.
Neame.
The director.
Because Irwin Allen tried to get a credit as co-director on the movie. Because he went in and directed one day some extras. And Irwin Allen was trying to make it sound like he co-directed the movie. Now, for some reason, the credit, they didn't have IMDb back then. So, But Neame took him to court. And they got this. He went to the DGA, rather. And they took care of it. But mm-hmm. Irwin Allen, you know, I've heard good things about Irwin Allen.
Right.
But he and they butted heads for years.
Wow.
And he was saying that if Jack told me if they were going to have one or the other at one of these conventions, they always had to make sure that the other one wasn't going to be there.
Holy cow.
So make it sound like they asked them first,
right?
So, because there was a real problem.
Wow.
So it's just kind of interesting little behind the scenes stuff. But that shoot, my God, everyone hated that shoot. Everyone worked on that and that movie hated it.
Oh, really?
Because they worked for months, mm-hmm. and what they would do is they go to hair and makeup, and then they would walk through a shower. And they work all day, wet, soaking wet.
Right.
So, and that was their whole, nobody had a good time making this.
That does sound miserable.
Yeah.
Just being in wet clothes all day, every day for months.
All the time. Yeah. So, yeah, it was a miserable film to work on. So, the deaths.
Yes, deaths.
Okay. So, the first one, and fairly soon afterwards, was Jack Albertson.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jack Albertson, a proper singer. As he demonstrated in Willy Wonka,
uh-huh.
I got a golden ticket,
mm.
and a really mostly likable guy, as far as I know. Chico and the Man, a hit television show with Freddie Prinze,
mm-hmm.
who committed suicide while the show was being made, so they continued on with a child, I think, which is always, you know, the kiss of death, putting a child in a show as a replacement, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like Dodie on My Three Sons. It's like, that's probably before your time. But when they stick a kid in to sort of move in a different direction.
You're betraying your original audience. That's not what they signed up for. Yeah.
And his sister was Mabel Anderson, who was Darren Stevens' mother on Bewitched.
What?
Frank, I'm having a sick headache. That was that's Jack Albertson's sister.
I did not know that.
It is. Jack Albertson and Shelley Winters, who played Jin on the set, he made sure Shelley was really busy because she complained all the time.
Oh.
So she would, you know, and in the water, she's a very skinny lady.
Right. Well, and she supposedly gained weight for the role.
She did.
And then she never was able to lose it
afterwards. But mm-hmm. we'll get to her in a second. But Jack Albertson was, they had him keep her occupied
mm-hmm.
because she was a real nightmare. She didn't like sitting around.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a bit of a, I mean, she had the goods. That's the thing about her. She could be a prima donna because she was of the goods. And she had already won Oscars. But anyway, so Jack's job was to keep her busy and let her win, because if she lost, she would scream.
Let the Wookiee win.
Yeah. But yeah, he purposely did. But he was a stage, very professional guy, and mm-hmm. And et cetera, et cetera. The next one to go was...
He died, sorry. November 25th, 1981, at the age of 74, from...
Mike?
Colorectal cancer. Told you it was coming back again.
Rectal cancer. Colon and rectal. But there's no in the word. Colon. Okay, well that makes sense. Yeah, so that must be Farrah Fawcett had that, didn't she?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay.
So rest in peace, Jack Albertson. Who was next?
Next was Irwin Allen, the man, the master of disaster. After he did Poseidon Adventure, which really legit, I think, there was a Titanic movie that was made in 1930-something, and there's a couple of those. But as far as proper disaster films, Poseidon Adventure was the first. And then he went on to make The Towering Inferno. He did, we mentioned this a little while ago, Lost in Space, Land of the Giants, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. And he had a heart attack when he was 75 years old. So he's always going to be known for, you know, the Poseidon Adventure mostly, right, than more than anything else.
And what year did he die?
He died in 1991, November of 1991. Oh. And he was sort of superstitious. He would always have the same extras working in all of his movies. So it was kind of interesting. Yeah. He was also a weird. Groucho Marx was a good friend of his too, and I think Groucho may have visited the set at one point, which would have been wow.
You know, I got the sense watching the Poseidon Adventure, because I just watched it again yesterday, as I know you did as well, because I hadn't seen it since I was a kid. And I got the sense that a lot of the extras, like in the ballroom, you know, when the whole ship flips over, I had a feeling those guys probably were just all a bunch of stunt people, probably, you would think.
Yeah.
And I think, well, listen. It makes sense maybe why he would use the same ones.
People that are into this movie are into this movie. I mean, like, wonderfully, insanely nerdy into it.
So there's like a whole thing about the extras. Michael Jackson fans of the disaster movie world.
But in a good way. I mean, these people, they've got nicknames for all the featured extras. I'll tell you more about that later on. But I mean, there's this lady, there's the Sharon Tate lady. These people are, it is so cool.
There's the lady that falls from the table after hanging from it. Several people do that, right?
Yeah. So some of the more featured extras there are, and Irwin Allen cast his wife as the nurse.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, with the bad wig.
When they run into the other group of people that are leaving,
she gave Stella Stevens a suppository.
Okay,
his wife, and then that scene creeped me the fuck out when I was a kid. It was like that. There's that website called Kinder Trauma where you see things that freak you out when you're a kid, and those people looking the other way and watching those other people just walking past that doorway. I just got goosebumps again talking about it. It was creepy. Didn't know there was a whole other group on that ship, and they didn't even look at each other. And ultimately they did. But that scene of them passing that doorway, that freaked me out big time. And same with the guy that when they found that dead guy in the kitchen, you know, with the burned up face, you know, that one was like, oh my god, that was supposed to be a jump scare 70s style, so it wasn't a jump scare really, but it was really an iconic moment for me.
And it kind of reminded me of a really great part of Shaun of the Dead when they run across another group of survivors who are basically carbon copies of them, remember?
yeah. That was a great gag. That was funny. That's a great film.
Yeah.
So Irwin Allen died. He's actually at Mount Sinai Cemetery, just next to Forest Lawn Hollywood Hills. I took a picture of his grave for my calendar a few years ago and turned it upside down. Not many people got it on the calendar. They just thought it was a misprint. The right people got it.
Yeah.
I think my ride's here.
Yeah, LA's finest are here to get you.
So next up is Roddy McDowell.
Well, Roddy McDowell, Cleopatra, Planet of the Apes, probably the thing he's most known for is Planet of the Apes. Longest Day, The Greatest Story Ever Told, Bedknobs and Broomsticks, one of my favorites as a kid, and That Darn Cat.
The best night gallery, though. The best night gallery. Yeah. Portafoy with the painting that kept changing. And he played don't you remember this? Oh, my God. So he kills his uncle and there inherits all this money. And uncle has a butler named Portafoy. And the guy's just evil. Roddy McDowell plays an evil guy. And there's a portrait on the wall of the house that they're staying in, the grandfather's house, and there's a cemetery next to it. And after they buried the grandfather that's in the cemetery, in the painting, he looked around and there was like the ground was stirred. And then he turned away and was doing something else, and he came back a few minutes later, and a hand was coming out of the grave. And the paintings change and change and change until it gets to the front door, and there's a pounding on the door. And
that's awesome.
It's so good. I won't say anymore. But Portnoy, that was Ossie Davis was Portnoy, the butler. It's really that is the best night gallery, but really, really well liked.
Roddy.
He was good friends. There were child stars, Elizabeth Taylor and he, and both British born. And he was he was famous for having to do these Sunday lunches at his house in Studio City. And he would arrange these really. His bathroom is in the Hollywood Museum on Highland. His bathroom. That everyone used. Uh-huh. That was right off the dining room.
Right.
I mean, Betty Davis and Mae West and Pee Wee Herman. And he would have these insane Sunday afternoon lunches. And just have this really wild, contrived guest list that he would, you know, purposely assemble. And these were legendary. I mean, to be a fly on the wall for these things. And, of course, he wrote a diary. And, of course, it's sealed for 100 years until after he dies, which sucks because why do we even know this?
100 years?
Something like that. It's probably 50 years or something.
Yeah, but still.
It just bugs me.
Wow, really?
Yeah. But, I mean, he is a photographer. There's Roddy McDowell books
out. That makes you think that it's like a real tell-all then, right?
It must have scandalous. I mean, he was friends with everybody.
Yeah.
And he was liked. So people probably, you know, told him some really cool secrets. Rest in peace. So Roddy died. Roddy died October 3rd of 1998.
From?
He had the cancer.
Lung cancer.
He had the lung cancer. Yeah. Nobody says anything bad about Roddy. Nobody puts baby in a corner.
Nobody puts Roddy in a corner.
No. Yeah. And one other thing about Roddy McDowell, he sort of started the tradition of marking celebrities' graves that are unmarked. There was an actress, her name was Florence Lawrence, and her nickname was the Biograph Girl, and also she was nicknamed the first movie star because she was one of the first people, probably the first female, to actually be known as a name. Florence Lawrence, as opposed to, you know, the It Girl or the girl who was too beautiful. And Florence Lawrence committed suicide, and she by ingesting ant poison and cough syrup. And she was buried in an unmarked grave at Hollywood Forever Cemetery, right across the street from our shop. And Roddy McDowell actually raised the money, or didn't raise the money, probably had the money. And put a grave, a tombstone on her grave, a grave marker on her grave. So good on Roddy McDowell. He appreciated Hollywood. He really did appreciate old Hollywood. And you have to go to that museum and see his bathroom. It is the most weirdest thing. And he's got tons of pictures of all his Sunday lunches there. You know, you can see the clusters of people. It's pretty cool.
What's next?
Red Buttons. You know, I got to look that up. It's not his real name. What's his real name?
Hold on.
Red Buttons. He won an Academy Award for a film called Sayonara. He was, which I'm sure would be probably strung up and burned the prints if it was released today, just by the title.
Red Buttons was born Aaron Chwat.
How do you spell it?
Chwatt. Chwat.
Huh.
Chwat.
I wonder why he chose the name Red Buttons, and I'm sure
probably because it was a hell of a lot easier to pronounce.
Yeah, and it's he needed the clever. He was a comic. That was his passion was. Mm-hmm. It's to be a comic. He was a good.
It sounds like a clown name. It sounds like the name of a clown character.
Yeah,
yeah.
And he won the Oscar. He was in They Shoot Horses, Don't They?
Mm-hmm.
He won an Emmy as well. So he was a very
He was also good. In The Longest Day, along with Roddy McDowell.
Mm-hmm.
He was also in Pete's Dragon. Another one of my favorites as a kid. And They Shoot Horses, Don't... Did you say that already?
Yeah.
And 18 Again with George Burns. Remember
that? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They were tight, him and George. I'm sure
really?
That old guard... I mean, I went to... I'll tell you about that in a second. Martha Raye's funeral was a trip in Red Button. I'll tell you about that. But here's the thing. He was teamed up. Well, I love that when Shelley Winters watches him running on the thing. He runs because he's lonely.
When he goes jogging by, yeah.
Look at him. But he was teamed up mostly with Carol Lindley. And she hated his guts. She even called him a cunt in an interview. She said he was a real cunt.
What?
So, yeah, they did not, absolutely did not get along. And that is...
With Carol Lindley?
Yeah. Carol Lindley.
The girl, the hot girl.
Yeah, yeah, one of the hot pants. Well, the second one with the hot pants, because Pamela Sue Martin had him too.
Yeah.
But yeah, she called him a real cunt because he was mean to her. They just didn't get along. And he didn't, well, of course, everyone hated the shoot. Everyone did. But he wouldn't do any of the reunion shows unless they would give him time on stage as a stand-up. He said, if you want me on your reunion show, I will do it, but I want time on stage.
I got some
to
material.
Do an act. I got an act. So he, they wouldn't let him, and he never did a reunion because of it. But but yeah, so when Martha Ray, you remember Martha Ray? Martha Ray was, for The Boys, Bette Midler's movie was sort of based on her because she would travel to, you know, entertain the troops. She was in the Sid and Marty Krofft shows. She played Benita Bizarre in The Bugaloos. She was in, oh my gosh, she was in a ton of things. And George Clooney is her nephew. No.
That's Rosemary.
No, sorry. It was a Rosemary Clooney thing with Martha Ray in a limo, and he said that they were in a limo, and they just pulled over to the side of the road, and Martha Ray leaned out and took a piss while they were in the limo, because they're all just really drunk. George Clooney used to drive them around. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is that's a published story. I mean, that's something I'm thinking of. So when Martha Ray died, and Martha Ray was married to this gay guy, Mark, I forget what his name is. I mean, this guy could not be more gay. Uh-huh. I mean, he just was straight out. He was on Howard Stern all the time because he was just so over the top gay, and married Martha Ray when she was wheelchair ridden. You know, I mean, she couldn't barely move, and he cut her sister out. I mean, her daughter out. She had a daughter and wouldn't let her near.
I feel
her.
Like that's, every week we have a story about a kid getting cut out of.
Yeah,
a famous person's life.
Yeah, by somebody who's sinister. Because Shelley Winters has one of those too.
Wow.
Well, not as sinister, but but anyway, Martha Ray was cut out from her family. So I went to her funeral, and Mark orchestrated the funeral, and the daughter showed up, and they were like, "And does anyone want to say anything?" Well, Mark was dying to not let people say anything, and the daughter came up and said, "Well, if I had my choice, I would have done this way. I had to find out that she died on the news or on the radio." And then Mark got up and goes, "Well, actually," and he did. He talked worse than Liberace. I mean, he had that whole affected accent, and it was just getting spiteful in front of this casket. And then there was a power outage. It was the weirdest thing. And then so then as we're going,
was it caused by a balloon?
Mylar balloon. So we're leaving, and Mark says, "Well, come to the memorial we're having at the Friars Club." So, okay, so I went, and they asked me when we went to the Friars Club, and this was weeks later. I don't know how long later, but it was a different day. And I went to the Friars Club, and they're like, "Who are you?" I said, "My name is Scott." He goes, "What are you doing here?" I said, "Mark asked me." So they said, "Okay, go on in." So I went in, and it was like, you know, and there's all these show business legends sitting around, and they're all sitting at the bar and, you know, drinking, et cetera. And Mark did a modern dance act on stage. He had a picture of her on stage, and he had these two little Twinkie dancers in leotards, and he was singing and dancing. And Rose Marie, she was there. She just like went up to the bar and started pounding drinks. It was in. Embarrassing, the sort of thing it turned out to be.
And you were there.
I was there. I took a first date there too.
Really,
well, the only day at the Red Buttons or to Martha Ray's funeral. But I did. We ended up going to the bathroom and legitimately going to the bathroom, like to use it. And Red Buttons came running in, and we're sitting here just chatting by the and Red Buttons whizzes by, and now literally whizzes by. But he goes into the stall and just lets it go, and we're just. Like that just didn't happen. This is an only Martha Ray's funeral. Red Buttons just came running by me and had a blowout in the bathroom in front of us, and it was like that was one of the best Hollywood moments ever. So that was a really long involved story.
It was amazing,
unnecessary,
it's what Dearly Departed podcast is all about.
It's not
though.
The first rectal story today. It won't be the last.
Nope, it's not our last blowout.
So Red Buttons actually he died at home. Of heart disease on July 13th, 2006.
He was 87.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace, Red. Okay, who else?
Well, we spoke about Ronald Neim, the director, who basically, you've summed it up. He was just a really likable guy. He really embraced the Poseidon Adventure.
A prolific director.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Name some of his other projects, Mike. If he was prolific,
off the
I don't
top
know.
Of my head.
Okay, no, I'm just curious. I'm not
Are
calling you out.
Are you quizzing me? Yeah, no, he's done a bunch. Hold on, I will. He, among many other things, since we mentioned Judy Garland, he directed her last film. I Could Go On Singing.
Wow.
And he directed Scrooge in 1970, starring Albert Finney, who we discussed on an earlier show. According to Wikipedia, for his contributions to the film industry, he was appointed a Commander of the Order of the British Empire.
The CBE, yeah.
And received a BAFTA Academy Fellowship Award, and which is the highest award that the British Film Academy gives filmmakers. And he just worked on a lot of things. He was a cinematographer, he was a director, he was a producer, starting, you know, going back to the 40s. So
he directed three actors to Oscar nominations. Wow. And Maggie Smith won a Best Actress.
Her first one. Her first Oscar was with him, yep.
Did you know he has a grandson named Gareth Neame? Gareth Neame produced and created Downton Abbey. Isn't that interesting?
And who is in Downton Abbey?
Maggie Smith.
Oh, my God.
Who is just, like, the gayest character. I mean, she's not gay in it, but, I mean, she's just, like, the camp, over-the-top, bitchy
she's
woman.
She's awesome. Yeah.
She really is.
Yeah, she is that show, basically.
I mean, she is that person. Every single role that she's in is sort of that character, just a snarky old lady.
Harry Potter, same thing, right?
And Neame, you know, say he embraced it. He loved the Poseidon Adventure. He showed up to those reunions. And he always said just the Poseidon Adventure. He was a very successful man.
Yeah.
Very wealthy man. Mm-hmm. And he said the Poseidon Adventure just gave him fuck you money. You know, it was just like fuck it money.
Right. A lot of directors and actors, they get that. They get that huge hit. And then they get to go do all the stuff that they want to do. And they don't, you know, they're not as worried about it. Money anymore, you know? Yeah. And also, you know, the studios let them make movies that they want to make because they made all this money off this one. You know, that happened. That Christopher Nolan has that kind of a, you know, reputation that he can go and do. So, yeah. All right. Who's next?
Ernest Borgnine.
Ernie. Yes. Ernest Borgnine, you know, one of the most prolific actors in Hollywood history, won the Oscar for Marty. He was in From Here to Eternity, Bad Day at Black Rock, epically in that movie. He was the bad guy. He was like the town bully. The Wild Bunch, McHale's Navy, Airwolf, et cetera, et cetera. He was just one of those guys that, you know, had a very long career and, you know, had huge hits in multiple decades, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, he was... I think you could qualify him. I don't think he was ever leading man, but he was a good... I never understood the term character actor. Doesn't every actor play a character? I never really got that
And
term.
I wouldn't even... He was a good support. He always had big supporting roles, just like he did in Poseidon Adventure.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, he was one of many stars.
He was kind of a foil to Gene Hackman's character in Poseidon Adventure. You know, he's always...
A lot of yelling. Oh, my God.
Yes.
That yelling. It was like Eddie Albert in Green Acres, like screaming. I had to turn the volume down watching him.
I feel like Gene Hackman yells all of his roles when you really think about
Rogo!
It.
He's just Rogo! And then Borgnine's like, Linda! But it was just lots of yelling. Linda. Always yelling.
Yeah.
Linda! I know what to do. God damn. I mean, it was... There was... Before you tell me, when you're... personal stories for a friend. This is information that I got from Jack, and it's a credible source. And I asked him if I could quote him, and he was fine with it. And he said that Ernest Borgnine loved his fans. He adored his fans, and he would always. But he was really cold to people that he worked with, professional fellow actors.
Interesting.
And he made a big stink about. I don't think he was a big fan of the gays. Not that you have to be. I don't really care. But there was a problem. He had a problem with having to sit through Brokeback Mountain as being an Academy Award winner when it was up for the Best Picture or whatever it was for. So he didn't want to sit through a movie about two cowboys getting it on. Whatever. You know, I don't need people to like me, and I don't call them names if they don't, but it just, that was interesting to me. And the guy who was, you know, because most people remember Ernest Borgnine, he got his big, he was, of course, a huge actor in films, but pop culture-wise, he was in a sitcom called McHale's Navy. And the guy that played the MC in the Poseidon Adventure was one of his co-stars on McHale's Navy. And his name was Bob Hastings. Yeah, Bob Hastings worked as the MC on the ship Counting Down to Midnight next to Carol Lindley. And he was on McHale's Navy with Borgnine. And when asked about Ernest Borgnine, he just stiffened up. It wouldn't say a thing about it. Just said, you know, we didn't have anything to do with each other at all.
So I will come to Ernie's defense now.
Mm-hmm.
I will play for you that documentary Happy.
Mm-hmm.
That I promoted. So Happy is about this assistant director and World War II fighter ace that I did a short documentary about. He worked with Ernest Borgnine on Emperor of the North.
Did you find in general most actors were nice to work with? You know, it turns out a lot of it has to do with age. Loved Ernie Borgnine. I did Emperor of the North with him. And I had my wife up there with me. And it was very hot. And Ernie insisted that she go in, into his dressing room where it was cool while we were shooting. And, you know, we did a lot of switching of trains. Ernie would drive one of the engines while the engineer drove the other one. He loved it. He was great. The older actors were great. Young kids are usually caught up in their money and their status.
That's cool. Yeah, I know people that went up there as fans to his house and rang his doorbell. He was always really nice and let him in and signed autographs.
Sure.
And the other thing is that he hated Shelley Winter's guts.
Really?
Yeah, and said that when he was not interested in doing the reunions anyway. But when Jack got Shelley Winters to do one of the reunions, he figured, well, he could use that as a selling point, maybe get Ernie Borgnine. So he said that Borgnine was kind of acting interested. And then Jack was saying that, you know, well, Shelley Winters is going to be in. And he goes, no way I'm going to be on stage with that bitch, Shelley Winters. You can forget it. So, and that's verbatim.
Right.
So, you know, she was a bitch. Yeah, that's misogynistic. Okay, sorry. But
so our mutual friend who we produced some of our earlier movies with, Lloyd, is distantly related, I believe, to Ernest Borgnine.
Is he?
Through marriage, I think. And so I got to know Ernest Borgnine's son, Chris Borgnine, who's he's a lighting effects guy now in Hollywood. And you can, when he tells you he's Ernest Borgnine's son, you go, oh, of course you are, because he's just, he definitely has the build, you know, that big barrel-chested build and everything. He's a big guy like that. And I know that, you know, Borgnine always had, you know, his famous group of old school, old guard actor friends that were always at his house. When you would apparently go over there, they were always hanging around.
Like a Hefner in a way.
Yeah, they were just always hanging out together, all of his old buddies. Because, you know, they're probably the ones that can tell the stories.
Yeah.
You know, as you get older. And you live to be in your 90s, and there's not many people left that remember the stories that you remember, you know? Maybe some actors he was not good with and others he was.
And some things
you know
he
what
just
I mean?
Didn't like. And,
right.
You know, that's cool.
You know, he was a character. You know,
he was married to Ethel Merman for 32 days.
I didn't know that, no.
That's true.
Wow.
They were married for 32 days, period. Like one of the shortest marriages in history, in Hollywood history. And he said they went on a honeymoon and everyone was, you know, sort of fawning over him and kind of ignoring her, sort of doing the DiMaggio Monroe thing, probably on a different scale. And she couldn't deal with it. So after a shorter period of time, they split up. And in her autobiography, there was a chapter called Borgnine. It's just an empty page.
Wow. Jeez.
So yeah, he died of, oh gosh, remember the masturbation thing that
yes.
he did that, yeah, what was it? Do you remember the quote?
It was something they asked, what's his secret to long life? It was like on a talk show and he said masturbation or something like
he said it under his breath when they went to commercial break, didn't they? And he goes, I really like to masturbate or something like that. Oh my god, that's so funny. So right at a book
and he worked, you know, until the end. He was doing voice work on SpongeBob.
Nice.
He was Henry, the records keeper in the movie Red, the kind of comedy action movie. With
Is that the Bruce Willis one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like the Helen Mirren.
And Helen Mirren and Morgan Freeman and all them, yeah.
I like that movie.
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
So yeah, he was in that too. They said the same thing. He kind of had a small part in it, but he was just like down to do whatever. He's his old guy, but he was like, he wanted to keep doing it because he liked it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so he died at an age of 95.
95, kidney failure at Cedars.
There you go. Another Cedars.
Ernest Borgnine's brother worked on the film as his stand-in and did his stunts.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
I wonder if that was a regular thing.
Well, it was the same with, I think, Gene Hackman. Hackman's brother did the same thing.
I think you're right, yeah.
So next up, Shelley Winters.
Shelley Winters, who was Oscar-nominated, like we said, for her role in The Poseidon Adventure.
Mm-hmm.
She was also in The Diary of Anne Frank, A Place in the Sun, Pete's Dragon again, and just another, like Ernest, just in a tons of stuff.
Oh, my God.
This is an epic
icon. Have you ever seen Night of the Hunter?
No, I don't think so. I know of it.
Seriously, this is like on the lines of Sunset Boulevard crazy.
Oh, really?
And there's a scene where, I don't want it to be a spoiler, but there is this, there's an image of her, and it's her I'm just going to...
Go ahead, go for it.
So she gets murdered in the movie by Robert Mitchum, who plays... And this is where the love-hate knuckle tattoos comes from.
Oh, okay.
So he kills her, ties her up, and drives her car into this water. It's directed by Charles Laughton. And it was basically laughed off the screen when it was made. And in retrospect, it's this genius thing. The images are... You'll flip. As a director, you'll flip when you see this movie. But he kills Shelley Winters and drives her into the bottom of this lake.
Kind of like Psycho.
And they show her underwater, and she's got this long hair, and she's dead, and her hair is moving, and the seaweed's moving.
Wow.
And you just see a fishing lure go by her face. There's people above, and you see the bottom of the boat fishing, and it's going right by her face. It's the imagery. Lillian Gish is a mental movie. It's about this man is trying to kill these two little kids to get money. Already a bizarre premise for a movie at that time. But anyway, she was in that, and she Academy Award winner, and what was the movie that she was asked to audition?
Oh, yeah, supposedly there was a story where I don't know the name of the movie, but it was described as a new director brought her in for an audition, and you don't ask an actor of her caliber to audition. Mm-hmm. You just don't. I mean, most major actors, you don't have George Clooney come in and read lines. You know George Clooney, you know what you're getting when you hire him.
Mm-hmm.
So they demanded that she come in and read for it. So she came in with a bag, and she set the bag down, and she pulled an Oscar out and put it down on the table and looked at them. And then she reached down and pulled another Oscar out and set it down on the table and said something along the lines of, "You still want me to read?"
Good for her. She was another one of those people who just didn't give a shit, you know? I mean, she slept with everybody. She didn't care about talking about it. If you asked her a question about Marlon Brando's dick, she would tell you. And she was... accessible. She used to hang out at the Spoon all the time, the Silver Spoon.
Oh, yeah.
When I used to hang out there before they tore it down and made whatever it is. But she was a regular there, tuna on toast. But she was
that what she would get?
Yeah, every day that's what she got, tuna on toast.
Tuna on toast.
Yep. That was her dish.
Well.
But no, really likable person. She famously gained weight for the role and never kicked it.
Yeah.
But I don't think she really gave a shit.
By that point, she was like, yeah, whatever.
She gave her Oscar, one of her Oscars, to the Anne Frank Museum in Amsterdam.
Oh, that's cool.
So her Academy Award. I mean, while she was alive, you know, shortly after she got it, she gave it to the museum. And that was very...
That's cool.
She was a decent person.
Mm-hmm.
And also, though, a live wire. Did you ever see her on The Tonight Show with Oliver Reed?
No.
And he said something really dismissive to her, and she went and got an ice bucket, on TV, and dumped it over his head. She just didn't give a shit. And she sat down, and Oliver Reed was, drunk, and he was being a dick.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember my ex, when he first started doing his talk show in England, he was going to have, they wanted to get Shelley Winters, but they wouldn't because they had to fly her over. They had to put her up in a nice hotel, and then she wouldn't show up. She's just famous for doing it. She just wouldn't show up.
She'd spend all that
thing.
Money, and she'd take the free trip, and then.
Yeah, so she was she was temperamental.
Yeah.
She screwed everybody. She says she screwed James Dean. No, wait, no, she said she met James Dean with Marilyn Monroe on Sunset. They said they were driving on Sunset, and Jimmy and his motorcycle kept cutting him off. Because I always knew, I know a lot about Jimmy, and I thought, you're full of shit. But there was Jordan the Lion, who's a friend of mine, who's a vlogger, that told me that story. And he goes, no, I'm not saying they were friends or anything, but they met and they had this issue. And it's like, okay, I wasn't there.
Huh.
So it's completely reasonable to think that Jimmy was being a dick and being playful and wanting to impress people.
Right.
But as far as I know, Marilyn and James Dean have never been in the same room together.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting interaction.
But they may have been on the same block together.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And Salminio was murdered in the building that Shelley Winters shared an apartment with Marilyn Monroe. And Salminio was murdered behind that building.
That was the same building?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. But Marilyn,
did we talk about that when we did the Salminio? I don't think we did.
Didn't we?
Well,
Marilyn.
Well, now you're getting it.
Marilyn was 36 and she had over 70 addresses. So, you know, it was. so right. It's easy.
Marilyn lived here. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
But she had a great memory. She was threatened by the beautiful young actresses, you know. So everyone really didn't like each other on the set. I mean, they're professional to each other, but it was a lousy shoot, and it probably just carried on to
got big egos and all that, and they're miserable, and people are going to snipe at each other.
Yep. Yeah,
and who knows what histories they have with each other? You know, they've been in the business a while by that point, so yeah.
And she, yeah, Jordan, a friend of hers at the end of her life, another one that, you know, her I think it was her daughter, cut her out, cut all her friends away. And she, because I went to her funeral. Her funeral was at the Spoon, actually. Robert Forster was there.
Really? Shelley Winter's funeral was at the Silver Spoon?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I got pictures. I'll send them to you.
Oh, wow.
Mr. Blackwell was there. Sally Kirkland. You know, it was all those, it was all Spoon people, though. Mm-hmm. It wasn't her showbiz people,
right.
But it was Spoon people. And Silver Spoon, the restaurant. And Jordan the Lion, my friend, he was very close to her at the end, and she handed him the script, a Tennessee Williams book for God, what was it? Suddenly Last Summer, is that the movie she was in? Tennessee Williams story, but it was all handwritten notes by Shelley and Tennessee Williams, and she goes, "You want to take it?
Wow!"
So she's just, he has this amazing thing that
incredible.
Was, yeah, so she was generous. She was. Didn't care, you know. She wasn't sentimental, or she was sentimental enough, but not possessive of things. And she died of a heart attack at the age of 85
on January 14th, 2006.
Tuna on toast.
There you go.
Next. The next one's Leslie Nielsen.
Yeah,
that's sort of a.
And he has a bit part.
Yeah. He was the captain of mm-hmm. That movie. You know what? They were chewing up the scenery in that movie. There was
the
like,
kid
damn
comes,
man.
And the kid runs into the. Remember, the kid runs into the under the bridge right as things are starting to hit. You know, the shit's about to hit the fan,
yeah.
And then the kid's getting thrown around, and yeah.
There was so much of this is on you, you know, and damn you. And uh-huh. Lots of throwaway lines like that that are right out of like first season of Star Trek. You know?
Right.
But Leslie Nielsen played the captain of the ship. He wasn't a featured player. You know, it's sort of one of those things that everyone goes, oh, yeah, that was him.
And it's a straight role. He's not a comedic role
yeah,
at all.
Yeah.
It's a dramatic role. And spoiler alert, they get knocked out when the ship gets flipped over and you never hear from them again.
He's the first of the victims. That's
yeah.
right.
The water crushes in through the windows and that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. He was deaf. That was one of the things that's kind of interesting. He wouldn't do any reunions because he was deaf and he didn't want to spoil the illusion for
he
fans.
He went deaf?
He went like probably 90% deaf.
Oh, wow.
So he wouldn't do things because he didn't want to be embarrassed and he didn't want his fans to have that memory.
Wow.
But before he went deaf, he was in all the Naked Gun movies,
of course.
And
yes.
Frank Drebin. Those are great.
Uh-huh, and Airplane.
Airplane.
And Don't Call Me Shirley.
Oh, my God. Yeah. These are throwaway lines that are just never. Nice Beaver. You know? I love that. Oh, my God. These movies are great.
I still remember the autopilot getting engaged and inflating.
Those movies are great. He's buried.
I speak jive.
Oh my God. Yeah, again. And no, that was interesting.
Right?
Okay, so one of the guys that was one of the black guys on the
Airplane?
Yeah. He was Marla Gibbs' husband.
Oh.
And interesting because Marla Gibbs' sister is one of the featured extras in the Poseidon Adventure. How is that for reaching?
What?
So, I think.
The 6 degrees of Leslie Nielsen.
Yes. Well, yeah. It's the Florence the maid on the Jeffersons or whatever she is.
Right.
Is that what I said?
I don't know.
Give me a second.
I will. So we just paused the show for a second to look that last little bit of trivia up about Gibbs. And...
The two jive guys in Airplane,
mm-hmm.
I didn't even know their names.
Yeah.
But I've always known it to be one of the guys is related to Florence from the Jeffersons, Marla
right.
Gibbs. So we just spent about 20 minutes looking online.
Trying
we know the guy's name is Norman Gibbs.
Because we don't want to give you guys bad information.
Yeah, but we can't find, we know who it is.
Mm-hmm.
We know the actors. You follow the links. And
yeah.
it doesn't show up.
No.
And then
and
you
it
look
says
at Marla
she was married
Gibbs.
To a guy named Jordan Gibbs.
Yeah, and it's not him. And
nope.
this guy was Norman. So
yeah.
maybe it was her brother.
Mm.
And then her sister was in the Poseidon Adventure, just as a featured extra.
Yeah.
But
this is the challenge you face, Scott, as in this business, is trying to write.
It's me. It's all about me.
Because probably like the president of that guy's fan club is going to listen to this episode.
I'm guessing there's not a fan
and you're going
to
hear all about it.
I remember they did a
hey,
reunion.
Man, there's a freaking, hey, there are freaks about the extras in the Poseidon Adventure.
They're not freaks, Mike. They give us
I mean
great information.
Freaks in a good way. I mean it in a good
we
way.
We call them nerds.
Right, nerds.
But I remember those guys because I go to those autograph shows. I just spent like 10 minutes talking to Tony Basil the other day. I mean, it's like I love these things, going to autograph shows. So, pardon? Tony Basil? Mickey?
Who?
Oh, Mickey, You're So Fine.
Oh, okay.
Tony Basil, who was a choreographer. She choreographed a bajillion things. Back, she was an Easy Rider.
Yeah, I knew
mean,
that.
Tony
Basil
said a billion things, but mostly everyone knows her for, hey, oh, Mickey, You're So Fine.
Okay, and, sure.
But hey, anyway, Mickey. So I'm just saying that. I love you. And the two guys from Airplane, I remember they said, Together Again. It was the two jive guys. They have like a 30-second scene in the movie. But
Together Again, finally.
But, you know, it's that thing. Mm-hmm. Something so iconic, and they weren't in the movie for all that long.
Yeah,
and,
it's an excellent, amazing scene, yeah.
But we got to, somebody will find it, no doubt. But yeah. I'd swear that one of the jive guys, his name is Gibbs, Norman Gibbs, mm-hmm. is related to Marla Gibbs.
In some way.
Yeah, and this has nothing to do with Poseidon Adventure.
Sure. Maybe brother-in-law.
Tuna on toast.
Could be brother-in-law. Could be brother-in-law. Who knows? We'll update you in episode 11 when
no,
10 people email us.
I'm tired. I'm done with this one. I'm done with this. But Leslie Nielsen. Oh, did you? His gravestone.
Oh, yeah. Leslie Nielsen's gravestone says, "Let her rip."
Let her rip. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's cool. A Drebin thing. Mm-hmm. That's great from Naked Gun movies.
Yeah.
O.J. Simpson movies.
The O.J. Simpson, yes. When O.J. was cool.
He was a funny guy, Leslie Nielsen. And by most accounts, a really likable guy.
I've never heard anything negative
about him. So, mm-hmm. that's right. So next, we just go through some of the cast members. There's Stella Stevens.
Mm-hmm.
Linda.
Still alive.
Linda.
Still alive in 80. Carol Lindley, still alive in 77.
Now, Stella.
Yeah.
Stella was friends with Sharon Tate.
Was she supposed to be up there that night?
Actually, that night.
Yeah.
There was another party at another house, and Sharon was invited to that party and chose not to. She said she was going to stay home. So there was a party that night.
She was pregnant. She was miserable, and she didn't want to go out.
It was Sheila. I think her name was Sheila Wells was the name of the actress, and invited Sharon to come to her house, and she was supposed to go that night, but chose not to. She just hung out in Benedict
King. She had her own friends over, and she just stayed there.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I mean, just think about it. If Sharon Tate had gone to that party, we may have never even heard of the Mansons.
That's right. That's
they would have been
100%.
Yeah,
she did one of those Matt Helm movies with that Dean Martin slurred his way through, like The Wrecking Crew. Good friends with Tina Turner.
That reminds me.
I mean, Tina Louise. Sorry.
rolling. <Okay.
laughs> We never ever do nothing nice and easy. So, but
you have more to say about Stella?
So she was Stella is she bought a house in Beverly Hills back when it was like 10 grand.
Right.
And so she sold it for multi-millions.
Right.
But she's very ill, and we wish her well. She's I believe Alzheimer's.
Hang in there, Stella.
She was legit, I think, the best actor in that whole movie because she did the whole gamut. She was the, she was the old prostitute. She played the nasty person. She played the vulnerable person. And she was the most well-rounded character in that movie, I think. And she's still alive.
Gene Hackman, still alive. He's almost 90. He's 89 years old. He retired from acting years ago. He kind of announced he was retiring from acting. He's been just living the retired life, and I think he's been writing books. He's an author, and he still narrates like documentaries and stuff because that's something you can easily do still.
Mm-hmm.
So he's still doing narration. But yeah, I think his last acting role was like 14, 15 years ago.
Hates the Poseidon Adventure.
Does he?
Will not discuss it. If fans bring anything Poseidon Adventure related, he refuses to sign it.
What?
Ben Stiller was a huge fan of the movie. Gene Hackman and Ben Stiller worked together in, I forget what movie that was, but Ben Stiller wanted to ask him questions and he wouldn't even talk about it.
He
would not even discuss it. So I think that's pretty interesting. But
that's fascinating.
What's the joke? There was only one meal served on the SS Poseidon. It was scenery. And Gene Hackman chewed it up.
It was his movie, man. And I mean, to go up against all those other actors he was on screen with and take it over.
Rodo!
I mean, obviously, though, he was written as the hero, but still. I mean, my favorite Gene Hackman is probably Hoosiers because that's one of my all-time favorite movies.
Yeah.
It's just he's great in it. He did Hoosiers as a paycheck movie, I think. I read in an interview, and he was surprised when it did as well as it did. And I don't think he even really understands why it has the staying staying power that it has had in Hollywood history, but it's one of the great all-time great sports movies ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in large part because
like
of him.
Rudy's like that. Rudy's like, where did that come from? But people love that movie. But yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird. Now he was, and also French Connection, my God.
I know.
And
The Conversation and Superman and The Birdcage and Royal Tenenbaums.
Birdcage.
And Get
now
Shorty.
There's him at the end of The Birdcage.
In drag.
I do not laugh out loud very often. That was so fucking funny.
When he's like, I don't want to be the only girl who isn't someone to dance with.
Oh, he was so hideous.
Don't leave me alone.
That was great. I mean, talk about someone that ate it and just did mm-hmm. that and owned it.
Right.
And that was one of the funniest things I have ever seen in a movie was him in drag. That was hilarious.
Yeah.
That was a really... So, yeah, great actor. Will not discuss it. I think that's kind of surprising. But hey-ho.
Hmm.
Let's see, who else is there? Oh, Pamela Sue Martin.
Yeah.
Who, she was only 18. Wasn't particularly mentionable. You know, she has no stories about making the movie. She was likable. Mm-hmm. She said that Gene Hackman taught her how to scream for acting.
Right.
And she went on to be in Dynasty and Nancy Drew, a two-hit series. So she had a pretty decent career. She retired and she's moved to Idaho. And that's where she lives.
There you go.
Yeah, good for her. And she still looks great. And, the end.
That's all of them?
No, Eric Shea. Oh. Eric Shea was the little boy.
Oh, right.
And he's another one of those, he was like a poor man's Billy Mumy, you know? Billy Mumy was in everything from, you know, the kid from Lost in Space. Billy Mumy?
Billy Mumy was like a poor man's...
No, I'm saying this guy, Eric Shea, was a poor man's Billy Mumy. Because Billy Mumy was in, oh my God, Billy Mumy was everything. He was in, you know, he was in Andy Griffith, and he was in, I mean, he was one of those guys, those kids who played the kid. He was in Twilight Zones. He was in Lost in Space. He was in a billion shows, like guest appearances on every single show.
Right.
So anyway, Eric Shea was one of those types, but in a 70s way, so not nearly as, like he was in Little House on the Prairie and things like that. Yours, Mine, and Ours with Lucille Ball and a few things like that. But and then in the book, he was supposed to be killed, but they wouldn't kill the kid in the movie. And he's just this precocious little kid
right.
in the movie. And he's another one that turned his back on it. And then somebody, I don't know, I've heard the story so many times about people where, you know, they won't talk about something they did or they're embarrassed by. And someone gives them the video or the DVD. Watch this. This is you have to own this. This is your part of you. And supposedly that happened. So I did meet him at one of those autograph shows. And he was nice enough. He doesn't do them very often anymore, but I did meet him. I did talk to him, and I got to ask him something in person that really bugged me. Now,
okay.
His stuntman, we know now through Jack Castro, my buddy, was a guy named Billy Porter. He was a midget. You know how I am about midgets.
Uh-huh.
I love midgets.
Uh-huh. You love the little people.
And he worked quite a bit doing stunts for kids. I mean, as they usually, as little ones do.
A lot of times women do stunts for kids, too, for the same reason, yeah.
And he played young Cornelius in Battle for the Planet of the Apes. So he was in that. But, okay, cut to about 20 years ago. I was at this bar in Silver Lake called La Bar, and now it's called the Black Cat. It's like the oldest gay bar in L.A. or wherever it was.
Yeah.
One of the protests happened there, and you know, it's iconic in that regard. But back when I went to it, it was all Hispanic. You know, nobody spoke English, hardly anyone at all. And this guy, who I come to learn is a culty kind of character around L.A., well, he goes by the name of Sandy Crisp, so he's now trans. That's the polite word for it.
Okay.
He lived as a female. I don't, you know, what we called it back then, I don't even know. It wasn't trans, though. Probably tranny, but you can't say that
you
either.
Can't
but
say that, yeah.
but mm-hmm. there you are. But it's part of my vocabulary.
Got
so
you.
Anyway, this guy's at the bar. And I worked with people with muscular dystrophy for years. You know, so I've assisted a lot of people that were incapacitated for whatever reason, MD mostly. So I know how to physically help people if they need it, if they're in wheelchairs, and he was in a wheelchair. So this guy, Sandy Crisp, female-ish, transgender, needs to go to the bathroom. And he could hardly speak because he's had polio. He had polio. I mean, it just goes on and on.
Jeez.
He could hardly speak. So I know how to speak to him. You know, I can decipher because I dealt with people who spoke that way. And it takes me a few times, but I can usually figure out what people are trying to say. So he needed to go to the bathroom. So I can say this because he lived as a female, but he needed to take a piss and he had a dick. Right. So take it for what it's worth.
Yes.
So he asked me if I would take him to the bathroom. So I'm like, okay. So I took him to the bathroom. And I helped him, you know, get his stuff together. And he peed. And then I washed my hands and we went back to the bar. So anyway, I'm talking to this guy for a long time. And he tells me he's Eric Shea's stunt double in the Poseidon Adventure, the little boy.
What?
I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, I did all the swimming scenes. And I'm like, okay, that just happened. So I helped this guy in drag, well, whatever,
yeah.
Sandy Crisp, who had to go to the bathroom, and I touched his dick, and it wasn't like I wanted to. I just helped him. And then he told me he worked on the Poseidon Adventure as the little boy stunt double. I'm like, okay, if you're going to make up something.
That's random.
You'd make up something better than that. But then when I did speak to Eric Shea at one of these things, I said, so I met your stunt double, Sandy Crisp, who was this other character, who I forget his real name. And he's like, that is not my stunt man. So I'm like, all right, that's really interesting. So now I challenge you to look Sandy Crisp up on the internet. Actually, look up her stage name, the Goddess Bunny. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Remember I told you she had polio?
Yes.
So she was, you know, disfigured.
Okay.
And there's this bizarre video of her walking. She's in a tutu. She's in tap shoes. She's got feathers in her hair. This is before she's wheelchair ridden, but really skinny, gaunt, like knobby knees. Like there's hardly any flesh on her. And all she does is walk and tap and walk and tap and walk and tap for, it's like a 6-minute video. And then she gets really close to the screen and looks right at the screen. It's scary as fuck. And it's still alive, too. But Sandy Crisp, who is the Goddess Bunny, who's this creature. Look, you guys, Mike's going to put this on the Facebook page. You're going to believe
yes.
this. It is one of the most, every once in a while I post it on Facebook and people are like, oh my God, I never need to see that again. Because it's scary. It was meant to be scary.
Right.
But anyway, so Sandy Crisp was not Eric Shea's stunt double, but that was a great story. And
that
Eric's
is a
like,
great
no,
story.
That never
He's
happened.
Like, nope.
L.A. again, and I touched his dick.
Wait, I touched that guy's dick for nothing?
Oh, man. Right. But you, okay. So,
he told me he was.
I'm very disappointed. So, okay, next, you've got Carol Lindley, who played the singer, who was Nani.
She was dubbed over. Her singing voice was dubbed over, but that's the song that won the Oscar.
Yeah,
Morning After. Yep.
Originally, as I understand it, Petula Clark was offered that role to be the singer.
Oh, okay.
And she wasn't. They didn't even audition her. They cast her. They offered her the role to be in the Poseidon Adventure as the singer.
Wow.
And you know that's her big. That's her big. Her big thing is
wow.
Carolyn. Now she does the autograph shows too, and she's I go to these things all the time because it's like, oh my God, it's so
you
cool to talk to
you never know
them.
What's going to happen.
No,
too. You
and
never
she,
know.
You know, she's yeah. I think yeah, she's no, she's really she's a bit. Well, she called Red Buttons a cunt, and she supposedly dated Roman Polanski for a while. Because she took Roman to Disneyland. They had to explain who all the characters were because Roman didn't know at that point.
Oh, okay,
he's
sure.
Not from America, and now according to Jack, the role of Catherine Deneuve in Repulsion was supposed to be Carol Lindley's part, but she wouldn't do it because it freaked her out.
Mm.
And Carol was one of those people that she good friends with Sharon Tate again. And
that's crazy.
She didn't say she was supposed to be up there,
right?
But she's part of the fallout around Hollywood from that. You know, beautiful blonde actress. You know, she slept on Larry Hagman's couch Martin Sheen's couch for a couple of months afterwards.
Mm.
And,
oh, right, because everybody was afraid.
Right.
Right.
She didn't want to be alone. She was living by herself at that point.
Yep.
But yeah, you're right. Maureen McGovern actually sang the song, and the song did win an Academy Award.
Yep.
And now that's become a theme for multiple sclerosis.
Really?
McGovern comes out and sings that song every year in the multiple sclerosis telethon.
That's nice.
So it is nice. And yeah. Good on her. Now, her brother, she had a brother in in the movie. And her brother was an actor, or actually a musician. Those guys in the band were actually proper musicians, the guys that were in the Poseidon Adventure van. Right. When it was Waddy Wachtel, the guitarist, who worked with Jackson Browne and Linda Ronstadt. And her brother was named, his name was Stuart Perry.
In the movie.
Yes. And he was a really well-known drummer at the time.
Mm.
And actually... the end, really. There's not a great story to that. But when he dies, you know, he's in her arms. And
right. I remember he's dying and he's bleeding.
Yeah. If you ever see the movie Phantasm?
No.
There's a scene where it looks just like, anyway, there's a guy, they pull the hood off one of those little creatures and it looks like him with yellow stuff pouring out of his eye. But anyway, there was one of the guys in the band, Dick Durock, who went on to be the Swamp Thing. The keyboardist worked with Donna Summer for years.
So we're getting into the extras discussion now.
Yeah, well, the band members having to do with Carol Lindley. Because I think we're done with the principals.
Yeah, I think we are.
And so Waddy Wachtel, Mark Tulin, who we just talked about, he worked with the Smashing Pumpkins, actually.
Wow.
And no, Stuart Perry was the Nani's brother.
Uh-huh.
And Jack Burrell these are part of the extras, was a tall man directly in front of Carol Lindley, head level. Jack has this thing down. It's fantastic. He was Milton Berle's brother.
Wow.
He worked as an extra for years. Chris Howell, he was the seaman to the right. In the photo on the bridge, he went on to a long career as a stuntman. Now, there's the most famous stunt, I think, almost in movie history, came out of that movie.
Which one?
Where that guy falls backwards into the ceiling, into that huge glass.
Yeah, it's an amazing shot, too.
It is stunning, and I think it's like in the top five stunts in movie history.
Yeah, it's really great.
And the guy who did that one, his name was Ernie Orsatti. And his mother was a friend of Irwin Allen's, and he plays Pamela Sue Martin's dinner date too at the beginning of it. So he has a couple of lines,
right.
But they paid him $100 and asked him if he wanted to do it. So he did that, smashing into that crazy window, and I think it ended up on a lot of the posters. It was certainly in the trailers, and $100 is what he got from it.
$100.
But he could dine out on that story forever.
Yeah,
and a hugely successful stuntman after that, too. He really did get a great career out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a couple of other extras that I asked Jack to name because I think they're so clever. There's the bun lady. They call her the bun lady due to her very large hair bun. Her name was Catherine Jansen. And she was also one that used to go to the reunions. And they think that her character was probably the purser's wife, because she's the one that has the line in the movie saying, "The purser's right." So she went on to work as an extra for years. She was in the Lucy Show. And what is this? Oh, you know what? Sorry, I'm jumping around a little bit. The woman who played Marla Gibbs' sister was also the stand-in for the maid in Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Oh, right on.
Which is another one of those weird... There's the Sharon Tate extra that she's in the scene that we talked about where they show the extra survivors walking in the distance.
And they say she looks like Sharon Tate, so that's how
and
she's
she
become,
does look a lot
she's
like
become
her.
Known as, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, these extras, it's only in retrospect that they become a thing, but it's fascinating, especially for those people that that study it and have these... I love the stripy dress lady and the piano lady or whatever,
Right.
These are cool, but anyway... I got to say, Jack, thank you, Jack, my friend Jack Castro, thank you so much for all the information you gave us for all this. I know that I didn't even touch on most of it, but Jack's, highly regarded in the Poseidon Adventure.
Yes.
They even, when they did, they brought him in for commentaries. They even, in the Poseidon Adventure remake for television, they announced, or they named the bar Jack's Bar, or Jack's Place.
That's
in
awesome.
Honor of my friend Jack.
Well, thank you,
so,
Jack.
Yeah, so he's... Yeah, it was really generous and kind and fascinating. So thank you very much.
So before we wrap up the show, guess what comes out in 2 weeks, Scott?
Actually, we have tickets for the advanced screening, too.
Once Upon a Time, .. in
Hollywood. Yeah. Yeah, we scored tickets the other day for the Cinerama Dome, which is actually one of the sets in the movie. And they released it was noon on Monday. The ArcLight is the Cinerama Dome. They're the ones who run it, and they released them on Monday at noon. Their website crashed.
I didn't know that. Because I want to get that's where I want to see it. The Cinerama Dome is my jam.
I mean, that's just the mass. Cinerama was, four projectors originally, et cetera.
Yeah.
It's going to be shown in 70mm, which is insane. But the website crashed. And Allison Martino, our mutual friend from Vintage LA, and her and I are texting each other furiously.
Singer Al Martino's daughter, and she was an executive producer on Mysteries and Scandals.
Mysteries and Scandals.
Yeah, she's great.
And she and I are texting each other furiously, like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm losing it.
You've been posting, like, every billboard you see.
Oh, my God. So we're, like, flipping out because we want to go to this thing. It's like we're dying to get to this thing.
Yeah.
So I said, fuck it. And I got in my car and I drove over to the Arclight. You know, within
you
I
bought was, tickets in person?
I was there by 12:15. And I got, wow. I got tickets for her and I and a couple of other friends. There was nobody in the lobby of the Arclight. Their website had crashed.
Everybody's crashing the website. Yeah. At home and, not,
and just
nobody's
waiting and
thinking,
waiting.
Yeah. Nobody's thinking like analog. Let's just go there in person.
So, you know, and Allison is so funny because Allison's like, I'll meet you there. And she has her mother. She's like in her robe practically running out of her car to get to inside. You know? It's going to be just as dramatic to see the movie. That story is just going to be as fascinating as the movie, or at least in memory.
Well, and we briefly mentioned earlier the Wrecking Crew.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gets heavily referenced in the film.
Because
they're making, it's like the movie that they're making in the movie.
Well,
right?
I think it was, she was.
Because they show Bruce Lee and stuff and Sharon Tate doing training and stuff. And
so it's got to take place over a couple of years because Sharon and Jay Sebring, when they were together, that's when Sharon was making that movie.
Right.
And so he took karate lessons from Bruce Lee, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they show him in the trailer at the house doing karate with Bruce Lee, Jay Sebring.
Yeah.
So I don't know how it's going to work out timeline-wise.
Yeah.
But that's several years. I think it's 65.
And in real history, that's Jay Sebring helped not discover Bruce Lee, but helped
get him on Batman.
Onto Batman.
Yeah.
Which then led to
Green Hornet.
Green Hornet.
Yeah.
Which then led to
lots of things.
Yeah. So, but what I was trying to tell people is you should probably, if you have not watched The Wrecking Crew yet, you should probably watch it before. It's one of the references that I think the film makes.
Yeah. I mean, they're
probably of many, but that's probably one you should check out.
In the trailer, it shows her in that costume from The Wrecking Crew. And it shows, she talks about it when she's at the premiere. She's watching a screening in the trailer.
Right.
Margot Robbie as Sharon Tate. So, they put the old poster on the side of Paramount, too, for one of the drive-by scenes. So it's going to be heavily,
probably
like you said,
referenced.
So timeline-wise, it's going to be interesting to see how they do it. Because at the same time, Wrecking Crew was on the movie poster, so was Oliver. And Oliver was 68. And I don't think the Wrecking Crew was earlier than that.
Sure.
And Funny Girl was also one of the posters they put up, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But, so that's going to be... So by the time we do our next podcast, that movie will have been out and we will have seen it.
And we are going to talk about it. Maybe we'll just do a Once Upon a Time in Hollywood episode.
Honestly. I don't think I could see it again. I mean, because thankfully the Arclight is like... The Cinerama Dome is designated. Because it's opening up that week, too, at his theater. At the New Beverly, which is a block away from the El Coyote.
Mm-hmm.
They used it as a location in the movie. They're repainting it now. God knows what it's going to look like in the movie, but they are repainting it, and all those billboards are all over town. So, it's a bit of a problem. They have to go through some legal issues because it's a first run movie, and his is a theater that specializes in, you know, art house films. So to have a first run movie shown in a Quentin Tarantino, the major chains are having a little bit of a fuss about it because they're taking away from their earnings. But it doesn't matter because it's Tarantino and it's theater. It's his own theater. So screw it. You know, good for him.
Right.
It's going to be great. I can't wait. And we will see. 70 millimeter.
I know. And I saw Tarantino's Inglourious Bastards at the Cinerama Dome.
Did you?
It's my temple.
Yeah.
The Cinerama Dome, when I go in there, it just feels special. And I usually know I'm in for a special experience of watching a film. Well, that was an epic episode of Dearly Departed Podcast for an epic movie. And hopefully the people listening didn't think that this was a disaster.
You've been saving that one. No, I hope that, I love when people listen to these things and tell me they like it. Sometimes it surprises me because we have such a good time doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope you walk away with a couple of nuggets of information you may not have known before.
And enjoy Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yes.
And we will talk to you all about it next time.
And watch the metal straws.
Do not run with a metal straw in your hand, people.
No.
Don't go out like a sea turtle. I don't even know what that means.
I don't either. I'm like, whatever. Mylar balloons.
All right.
This has been an episode of the Dearly Departed Podcast. Dig up more episodes at DearlyDepartedPod.com. and on iTunes and Google Play. See you next time.